welcome to Ask an Atheist. Sam's still on break, but with me in the studio right now are Meredith and Jeremy. How are you guys?
Good.
Doing good?
Man, it's been quite the Sunday. It's been quite the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday in the land of sports and free expression and our dear Donald Trump. So we're just going to start off by getting right into it. You might want to sit down or possibly take a knee for this one. Man, okay. So Donald Trump urged the NFL to fire athletes who decided to kneel during the playing of the Star Spangled Banner and further urged spectators to walk out in protest of kneeling athletes. Trump claimed that those who kneel to protest law enforcement treatment of Black Americans are disrespecting the flag, American heritage, and everything we stand for. Trump tweeted a day later that basketball star Stephen Curry would not be welcome at the White House, even though NCAA champions Golden State Warriors had already decided that when they travel to Washington, they will not visit the White House, but will celebrate equality, diversity, and inclusion. This is in stark contrast to another tweet that you found, Meredith.
Yeah, maybe from a couple years ago, maybe from the same person. Maybe Donald Trump in 2013 tweeted something exactly the opposite.
So he was a Twitter fiend at that time, too.
He's always been a Twitter fiend.
And what exactly did he say?
In 2013, President Trump tweeted. Not our President Trump.
But he did tweet about the then President,
the then President Obama. President should not be telling the Washington Redskins to change their name. Our country has far bigger problems. Focus on them, not nonsense.
Oh, nonsense, like getting involved in, you know, sports and politics and things like that, where you have individuals that are, you know, maybe trying to take a stand against things that are horrible. So he's followed up with some defenses of his tweets, and this was at a rally on Friday in and it wasn't an official, like, you know, thing that he was doing. It wasn't an address to anyone or any particular, you know, governing party or anything like that. but he certainly got his hoops and hollers of praise in this case.
Yeah.
One of the really interesting follow-ups is that I think people have said that's a bridge too far. Enough is enough. So, Meredith, you're kind of our resident football fan here in the room, right?
I think in the room, yes, I would be the resident football fan.
Well, it is Sunday. You are wearing the T-shirt, right?
T-shirt and the matching colored leggings.
So what do you make of then the sort of the whole thing about kneeling and a player's right to kneel and Trump's, you know, horrible, malicious words towards those who demonstrate in this way?
Probably, I think all of the same things that you're thinking and our listeners are thinking is that Trump needs to stay out of the NFL. It's ludicrous. Well, it's ludicrous. Well, on the very top of it, you have this ludicrous idea that Trump needs to meddle in something like football. Like, we have so many other things going on in the world, across the world, internationally, that he could be focusing on, like the devastation in Puerto Rico. And here he is.
Oh, like an entire nation, island, territory of, you know, like 3.5 million.
Without power.
Oh, so without electrical power on top of there, without normal power that they usually don't have, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to take an opposition to you and say that him meddling in football is good, the silver lining being he's not paying attention to things that actually matter or getting us involved in a shooting war with North Korea for no good reason.
Oh, but wait.
Might be. Is there an upside to him getting into politics and football and things like that?
I could see that argument. I could see that it's pulling his attention away from more important issues, so he doesn't act impulsively.
So the hobbits can get to the mountain and throw the ring in,
right? Uh-huh. But I don't necessarily think that's actually what's going to happen, or that what's happening now, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that later, because there is stuff happening with North Korea.
There is, too. But let's not leave the football field for just a minute, because football fields around the country today, and even baseball fields yesterday, you had the first baseball player, pro baseball player, that actually took a knee during the national anthem. That's Oakland A's rookie catcher Bruce Maxwell. He knelt during the national anthem. He became the first MLB player to do so, and then the Oakland A's actually made a Twitter statement in support of all players' constitutional right to free expression. So there's that. But on football fields across the country today, you have everyone. I mean, I don't think there was one team that did not have a player that didn't express some kind of solidarity with those who were kneeling, either by taking the knee themselves or by locking arms in protest or by throwing a fist in the air.
Right.
We were looking. I don't think that there has been a game yet that hasn't been a display somewhere.
I haven't seen any. It seems like all of the teams are taking this seriously as, you know, a league thing, and they are all doing their own types of protests. Yeah.
So some interesting things. You have coaches and owners and team franchises that are also coming out with their statements in support of players who do so, talking about working to have full inclusion of people on the field and off the field, looking at time for healing, for change and how people are treated, quit diminishing humanity, a lot of like nice, you know, statements and things like that. There were some that I found curious, though.
Yeah, there were. Pete Carroll's in particular was a bit odd on the wording, I think.
Yeah, so that wording thing, what stuck out to you in terms of the wording on Pete Carroll's?
We need to stand together, we need to stand together, we need to stand together, when the issue is actually about kneeling.
Yeah, so that stand can't really be overlooked, right? That can't be unintentional.
Especially because he used it multiple times throughout his statement.
Right, and he said, you know, here's his statement actually. It says, there's no longer a place to sit silently. It's time to take a stand. We stand for love and justice and civility. We stand for our players and their constitutional rights, just as we stand for equality of all people. We stand against divisiveness and hate and dehumanization. We are in the midst of a tremendously challenging time, a time longing for healing. Change needs to happen. We will stand for change. Maybe we all have the courage to take a stand for our beliefs while not diminishing the rights of others, as this is the beating heart of our democracy. And he has a few more little lines there.
What did his team do today?
Well, Seahawks actually were playing with the Titans, and both the teams in unity decided to decline to come out onto the field during the anthem altogether. They said, nope, we're not even going to show our faces. We're just going to be in the locker room. This is not part of the sport. We're not going to enter into this. And they had big, statements each teams themselves of saying, you know, this is a big deal. And it was an intentional decision to stay in the locker rooms.
Yeah. And then a lot of the Seahawks teammates came out of the locker rooms linking arms, locked arms.
But back to that language of standing, right? You get that we can, you know, take a stance and stand up for our beliefs and things like that. To me, this seems like a very two-sided way for Pete Carroll to say, well, I'm going to stand during the national anthem, so I'm not going to piss off those who might, you know, be mad to see me kneeling. But when people ask, why are you standing, Mr. Carroll, he can say, I'm standing for, you know, constitutional rights and for healing and for democracy and for change.
It's a very... fitting for the Seattle climate for him to be saying those kind of, like, I don't want to say fake progressive, but they're very like buzzwordy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm going to pretend to be progressive so long as it, suits me and doesn't harm me.
Right.
So as soon as he says he wants to take a knee, that harms him. He's not going to lump himself in with that.
But at the same time, he can say, I'm also on the progressive change side,
right?
Because this is what I'm standing for. I thought the whole criticism that people are having with knee is that it's disrespectful to the flag and to our country. So,
which is very backwards.
So if Pete Carroll says the reason I'm standing is for justice and for change and for standing against divisiveness and hate and dehumanization, isn't then he saying I'm not standing for respect of the flag? I'm standing for an end to dehumanization. Like, isn't Pete Carroll then standing for the wrong reasons for all these people that are, you know, woo, respect the flag and our heritage?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you also have Seahawks owner Paul Allen, who says that they fully support the players' use of freedom of speech and peaceful action to highlight existing racial and other divides in the country, while saying, "Yeah, we're down with the military. Like we respect our service members." And said, in contrast, though, however, the players believe that these issues need to come to the forefront. So issues of not denigrating and injuring and harming and killing black and brown individuals by the police needs to come to the forefront above honor and respect for service members. It doesn't say we're going to disrespect service members by saying
the
black people decide to
can't feel it. Where there are bombs going off, they can't. Oh, I lost a bit of courage because somebody in Dallas wasn't standing up for the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever. That's not how life works at all.
Magical spell that gives power to our nation's armed forces.
No, it's not a clap
forces.
If you believe in fairies sort of thing.
You also have many, third generation, fourth generation service members who are tweeting, yeah, I'll gladly take a knee, or I'll gladly support your right to take a knee during whatever kind of song or protest or anthem that you want. I didn't fight, I didn't do three tours in Afghanistan.
They're literally, fighting for the rights that, thank goodness we live in a country where the president can't fire people willy-nilly because he disagrees with their opinion, only if they work for him.
Yeah.
Which I don't know that he has many more people to fire in that respect either. I mean, how many people
have
seen?
This administration has had more turnover than Labor Ready.
So another interesting thing is the performers getting into the fray. So, our own team, like you said, the Seahawks and Titans, they were playing at the Titans. The singer, Megan Lindsay, and her guitar accompanist who performed the anthem, they actually took a knee at the end of their performance. In addition, Rico Lavelle, who performed the anthem at the Lions-Falcons game, ended his rendition, his song, his performance, by kneeling and then raising his fist. So you have people that are capable of acknowledging, hey, this is an honor for me to sing the anthem. And during the anthem, there are people who we are honoring. But at the same time, I'm going to be, in solidarity with those who are recognizing that just because we have this anthem doesn't mean that we can blindly go forward.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that need to change and be fixed in our country with equality and with equity and with people of color. And it's good to show solidarity for them. And it doesn't have anything to do with disrespecting service members or disrespecting the flag. Think of all the things we do every single day that disrespect the flag. Are you wearing flag shorts? Maybe?
Yeah, some people get around that flag code by saying, like, oh, you can't use it as clothing. Well, as long as it wasn't originally a flag that then you took and then you sewed it into a pair of boxer briefs, right?
Does anyone else see irony in Trump insinuating that other people are disrespecting the armed services when he went on Howard Stern and bragged about his personal Vietnam being in the club scene in New York and dodging venereal disease?
That was what he said? That was his personal
Vietnam?
Yeah,
don't look at me shocked. That's totally the kind of thing that falls out of his mouth on a regular basis. And the only reason he's not saying that sort of thing right now is because he happens to be in charge of the country.
Nominally, I guess. The disrespect thing for your service members and for our heritage was put blindly to the test when Trump would say, hey, you know what? If you're a spectator and one of the players in the NFL or one of the athletes takes a knee, I dare you to walk out. Right? It's all about a money thing for him. He said, oh yeah, if everyone walks out in protest of the players taking a knee, then they won't get money and the ratings will go down.
At
right?
which point they would try to make it contractual, like Marshawn, whatever, where he has to go Marshawn answer Lynch. Questions. Like that's part of their contract. At which case,
and can't just
this
say no
minor
comment.
Thing, which is just becoming a huge thing, would have to be argued all the way up to the Supreme Court. Can your corporation force you to be a patriot?
Yeah.
Well, here's the in terms of all that respect stuff, though. Beyond whether your corporation can force you to do that.
I need to revise that comment. Can your corporation require you to be exactly the kind of patriot they want?
There you go. Okay. But even beyond that, the respectful part of this, when you think that, it's disrespectful to be taking a knee to some kind of, magical idea of patriotism, our so-called leader, he's urged spectators to walk out and protest if athletes take a knee. That really just puts blatantly, obviously, the fact that Trump, for him, it's more important to, flip the proverbial bird to advocates of human dignity and human safety than it is to remain standing during the anthem. He said, to him, it's not about respect for the flag or for the anthem or for service members, because he would prioritize you walking out during said anthem to say, na-na-na-boo-boo, I hate you, brown person kneeling, he would prioritize that over staying during the anthem. It's not about the flag to him. It isn't about the flag to him. It's never. It's about him being petty and vicious and bullying. And for him, I really can't see how it's anything other than something steeped in his white power over black entertainers who, on top of that, he'd happily have continue bashing their heads in, you know, getting their heads bashed in on the field or off the field, whether it's police brutality, whether it's we should go back to how the game used to be when they didn't pull you off for aggressive tackles. These are, you know, his entertainment, his ratings, his money of, you know, black bodies saying, you know, that's what's disrespectful to him, that he can't order around black young men to be able to be hurt at, you know, his, for his entertainment value. And that to me is, I think, possibly the most crude and disgusting thing that I've seen. Well, I want to say this month.
This week, maybe.
This week, yeah.
Today so far.
Today so far, something. I don't know how he's going to dig himself out of this, and I don't know how.
Well, he'll just have another stupider scandal.
I don't know that the general population is maybe as keen on, or as keen to how he operates as you are. That's a very insightful comment that you made about how he equates brown and black people and people of color to entertainment. Like, and being disposable bodies just to, you know, entertain people. I don't think a lot of people make that connection that Trump thinks that.
I really want to bring back the protests, bring back to attention the protests that happened at Ole Miss. Was that 1 year or 2 years ago where the entire college football team decided to protest and forfeit by saying, look, no, there's issues of racism here. And the majority of you know, the athletics are disproportionately, you know, young black people. And if you really want to make a difference, like, stop using black individuals for your entertainment as disposable individuals and then trying to make it about disrespect for some piece of paper or some piece of fabric.
You know what's actually disrespectful to people in war zones fighting for the ideals of the Constitution is to have such a hackneyed understanding of how the Constitution works to want to use those people's blood to stop citizens of this country from using their First Amendment rights. That's disrespectful.
I don't know that there's anything that Trump could say in terms of the flag, the anthem, the pledge, sports, that could be in any way construed as respectful at this moment.
There isn't, and there won't be.
I don't know if we can move on yet to something else. We're moving out of the country at this point, but still focusing on Trump. Are you guys ready for something?
Sure.
Okay, so you were saying something slightly more, you know, stupid or the next ridiculous, disrespectful scandal. Trump can't be bothered to even learn the names or the locations of countries that, you know, whose leaders he's trying to talk to. Did you guys know that?
No, tell me more.
In a speech to African leaders at the United Nations this week, Donald Trump praised the made-up nation of Namibia for their self-sufficient healthcare system. The remark referred to how the nation revamped their healthcare system during the Ebola outbreak of 2014 to control the spread of the disease, which killed thousands in neighboring countries. The White House was quick to clarify that Trump was actually referring to the country of Namibia, and even edited the official transcript on the WhiteHouse.gov website to reflect that he had actually said Namibia. Trump also congratulated Africa on their growing economy and business potential, bragging about how many of his friends are visiting Africa trying to get rich. Now, I couldn't quite believe this for myself, that he had actually said Namibia. I was like, did he mean Namibia? Did he mean Zambia? Like, what was
he meant? Naboo from the first
Narnia?
Star Wars prequel.
So let's actually hear from his own mouth what he meant.
I'm greatly honored to host this lunch, to be joined by the leaders of Cote d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, Ghana, Guinea, Namibia. In Guinea and Nigeria, you fought a horrifying Ebola outbreak. Namibia's health system is increasingly self-sufficient.
So meanwhile, while everyone's like freaking out and laughing about Namibia, Meredith, you actually found something even more, an additional slip, an additional gaffe there. Which countries actually struggled with Ebola in 2014?
It was not Nigeria. It was Liberia.
Oh, well, you know, it rhymes, you know.
It's kind of in the same area.
No, like
continent? Not really at all.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So the I believe that Lagos had, you know, one or two cases in the actual city, but they didn't have a huge outbreak, right? This is Liberia, Guinea, and Ivory Coast. I guess maybe having Trump say Cote d'Ivoire, you know, once, and like not messing up on that name.
Good job.
You know, that was enough. That was the most that he can handle. And from then on, it just became Nigeria, Liberia. What's the difference? Nambia, Namibia, well, Zambia.
In his defense, up until 3 hours before that speech, his staff was trying very hard to convince him that Africa wasn't a country.
Yeah. That very well may be.
I mean, he kept referring to it as if it were a country.
This is not like just an alternate pronunciation, right? Which is where that, when we looked at that White House transcript, I couldn't believe that they actually had written down Namibia without the little, you know, sic, right? That's the thus. That's the Latin for it was said as such.
That is pretty shocking. This is probably the most dishonest thing this administration's ever done.
Crooked Trump, might we say? No, but it is not a matter of, you know, the word being, you know, N-U-C-L-E-A-R, but the president accidentally saying nuclear, right? It's not just an alternate pronunciation of things. This is
a made-up country.
This is a made-up country. Nambia does not exist except in the mind of some confused, addled, you know, man who thinks that again, ratings and money are more important than black and brown bodies, you know, which, you know, might be, you know, why he just can't even give the time of day to African nations.
At least we finally have an answer to, hey, black people, vote to me. What the hell do you have to lose? And that is your First Amendment right.
Your First Amendment rights, your identity, your country of origin, your right to, you know, not have your head bashed in either on and off the field. Man, I don't know if we can take much more of this. I don't know if I can take much more of this. I have to go to school and look my students, my children in their faces and the football team, my football players that are going to be going out on the field. And you know, a 16-year-old has more, you know, cogent ideas about what things are. We're doing geography right now in our beginning units in both Spanish class and in their ninth grade history class. These 14-year-olds know more than Donald Trump. Guys, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if I can handle it, but that's what we got right now. I don't know if we have any more best words. I don't know if I can handle anything more than best. We'll see after the break.
You are listening to KTAH LP 101.9 FM, Radio Tacoma, operating under a construction permit. If you'd like to help us out or learn more, go to radiotacoma.org. Specifically, if you're hearing this, we'd love to hear where you are and how you found this. Now, back to the testing.
Okay, can you say Radio Tacoma?
Radio Tacoma.
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 KTAH LP 101.9 FM.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist or Ask an Angry Atheist. I've been an angry atheist the last 2 weeks, two episodes, yeah. But give us a call, give us a voicemail at 844 Skeptic. I think we could use some other angry atheists as well, or maybe you can help
solidarity
or neutralize my anger. I don't know. Guys, there was something I forgot that from best words. I know that I had said I don't think that there's anything better than best, but we do have some more best words, and this has to do with rockets and vocabulary lessons.
Woohoo!
Despite warnings from his top aides to stop personal attacks on North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump escalated his use of inflammatory language by calling Un a rocket man and a madman on a suicide mission in a speech to the UN General Assembly earlier this week. The insults continued in subsequent tweets issued by Trump referring to Kim as Little Rocket Man and threatening that North Korea will be tested and may not be around much longer. Kim responded by calling Trump a dotard, an English word which means either a weak and senile old man or an old beast lunatic when translated from Korean.
Those are odd synonyms.
Weak and senile or old beast lunatic. Yeah, I like it.
It's as if someone went back in time and made up this word just for Donald Trump.
So I have to admit, this was a new word for me. And
I think it was for all of us.
I hadn't actually heard it pronounced or seen it printed before this moment, before this week. And it is spelled D-O-T-A-R-D. And I got to admit something to you guys.
Did you not know how to pronounce it either and think it sounded like something else?
Well, not only did I not know how to pronounce it, I think I was reading it as dotard as I was reading it, I also didn't realize that it was a real word. I thought that maybe it was, since, you know, Trump was...
You thought Trump had said it.
No, I thought that Kim Jong-un
He was pulling a Trump.
I thought he was pulling a Trump, too. I thought that, you know, like, Trump had said Nambia, Trump had said Covfefe, and so I just thought that Kim Jong-un was, you know, playing at the same level and making up, but maybe a little bit cleverer than Donald. I honestly thought, and it's a little bit sad for me to admit this, I honestly thought that Dotard, D-O-T-A-R-D, was a portmanteau that's a mix of two words, right, between Donald and a word that is often used as a slur to denigrate people of developmental disabilities.
Yeah.
So I learned a new word, and I learned that dotard is not pronounced dotard. So I hope that you also had learned this well before hearing my voice say it. This actually kind of impressed me. It actually brought up Kim Jong-un in my esteem, right?
Like, maybe he's a little bit smarter than Trump?
Yeah, that he actually does have the best words. Like, he does have,
do we need to change our segment now?
He has, like, real vocabulary. Like, that's pretty amazing, right? Did he issue this in English? Did he say it in Korean?
He issued it in Korean, and that's where there's a little bit of disagreement about dotard. I keep wanting to say dotard. Dotard. There's like disagreement about what the English word should actually be. The closest translation many people has found is dotard.
Okay.
Dotard.
Dotard.
So, I'll get it.
But also imbecile, senile person.
Senile, beast, man, old, beast.
Senile
man.
Wolverine.
I don't get it. Yeah.
Maybe it could be two or three words in English.
Senile, old, beast, man. Yeah.
Of weakness.
So, I mean, perhaps also because it sounds a little bit like daughter, like, you know, the female offspring. Yeah. Maybe there's a little insulting thing there. Maybe the interpreters and translators actually were looking for something that people, even educated individuals like us, might mistake for possibly a Donald Trump slanted insult, right? Yeah. I mean... Because they could have just said, that he called Donald Trump an imbecile, right? Or that they called him a senile old man, or they called him, you know, an idiotic oaf. Like, any of those probably would have been fine, but I think that I like that this has been brought into our modern vocabulary.
I'm going to say that it's probably also possibility that this is just a common Korean insult and there isn't a massive language conspiracy going on.
I like the language conspiracy idea.
Hey man, we don't get a lot of conspiracy theories, so let us have this one.
I just think you're reaching.
Okay, well, there's other people that are anti-Trump as well, a little bit closer to home than North Korea. They don't call him any fancy vocabulary words or anything like that, but I am sad to report, guys, that in our hometown of Tacoma, vandals armed with black spray paint defaced a Tacoma elementary school with a variety of anti-Trump, anti-Nazi, and pro-punk graffiti. The vandalism featured a slashed-out swastika, an F Trump expletive, a Roman cross in a circle with a line through it, which is similar to the logo used by the band Bad Religion. Bad Religion headlined the Punk in Drublic Music and Craft Beer Festival the night before the graffiti was discovered. And also spray painted was the word Pennywise, which could be a reference to the punk rock band, a different one that didn't perform, or the name of the evil clown monster popularized by the rebooted movie adaptation of Stephen King's It.
Okay, due to the ambiguity of the graffiti, I think probably North Korea did it.
Clearly.
Definitely.
But the vocabulary is so low in level that I don't know.
They didn't graffiti dotted on there?
No, they didn't graffiti that. And the expletive was the fully spelled out expletive, gracing Trump's nominative. So at first what drew my eye to this is that, like, oh, someone has anti-Trump graffiti and anti-swastika, and it's also, anti-Catholic Church. Because I'm not that up on my Bad Religion iconography.
Because you don't know the logo.
Right. And it wasn't until the next day Bridget actually came to post show, having gone to the Punk in Drublic Festival, she came the next day wearing the Bad Religion t-shirt. And I said, oh, okay, this is just a little punk thing. I don't know if it's for punk music or it's just punk teenagers.
Probably punk teenagers, maybe punk music. I don't know.
Should we be buoyed by the idea that teenagers are are that motivated by, you know, by the recent resurgence of Nazi symbology and rhetoric, that they're motivated enough to spray paint on their old elementary schools, you know, anti-Nazi things.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, no.
I don't know.
Well, no, that's Bush League. Get the gas cans out, go out in the football field and ride it for real, light it up.
Oh, while taking a knee at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there yeah. We'd be going far there. Well, there's more things going on at Tacoma Elementary Schools, different elementaries, but this is a little bit of a follow-up from something we were talking about last year. Seattle's chapter of the Satanic Temple has ceased running its after-school Satan Club at Point Defiance Elementary School in Tacoma. Last year, the club held activities once a month for elementary-aged children to provide contrast to the Evangelical Christian Good News Club that met on campus. The decision to discontinue the after-school Satan Club this year reportedly had to do with funding and a lack of volunteers associated with the temple. The temple has released its curriculum to the public to encourage others to run their own local clubs. What do you guys make of this?
I'm sad that they're not doing it in Tacoma anymore. And I you know, honestly, I wish I had more time to volunteer to teach it.
I'm thinking about, okay, so there weren't enough volunteers. There was nobody to pick up the, you know, the slack here.
That seems odd to me.
Well, it's, I mean, the Seattle Satanic Temple is centered in Seattle. They don't have
Did
a
they
lot
do any
of...
reaching out? There's a pretty strong community of atheists in this.
Well, I
and
can
Satanists.
I can tell you that I didn't hear from anyone seeking perhaps, you know, someone with an education background with, you know, humanistic principles and values that could execute you
lazy
know,
Seattle Satanists.
Curriculum that, you know, might be available that
Becky,
like 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Tacoma. I'm just calling out the Satanic Temple just a teeny bit because they really do good work and it's really fun. And I'm excited that the curriculum is no longer, you know, eyes only, but mm-hmm. fully available to the public. So, you know, having something that is built on the principles of secular humanism, because it really is. I mean, the Satanic Temple has, you know, bodily autonomy and integrity and all of those things that are compatible with humanism. And many of the educational modules are very similar to the British Humanist Association, you know, Sunday school educational modules. And
yeah, believe it or not, they don't actually teach you about Satan.
No.
That's, you know, a lot of the kids were probably upset that they went there and like, when do we get to slaughter a goat and paint a pentagram with its blood? And didn't turn out to.
No, never. Instead, we're doing environmentally friendly activities.
Lame. I'm going to go spray paint stuff about Trump on the school.
Oh, do we think that it was disgruntled
Satanists.
Fifth graders?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was disgruntled fifth graders that.
I'll accept that theory.
Okay. All right. So not North Korea.
Not North Korea.
But we're saying actually that disgruntled fifth graders are at about the same level of intelligence as North Korea in terms of their graffiti skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you put one of them in a room with Jeff Foxworthy and Donald Trump, they would win the game show.
Okay. All right. The Are You Smarter Than mm-hmm. That one? Is it a fourth grader or a fifth grader? Are we upping the standards unfairly?
Are you smarter than a fourth grader? Fifth grader.
Okay. All right. Well, you know.
I think it's unfair to dissect the reference in this way and then we should just move on.
Well.
Anyway.
We can move on. We can move on. Hey, did you guys know that it's not the end of the world?
It isn't?
No.
I'm pinching myself. I'm still alive.
We are still alive. A planet has not crashed into us. Sigh. Jeremy, you seem disappointed.
I didn't know it was supposed to be the end of the world. I could have gone crazy last week like it was Mardi Gras and then been disappointed, but instead I started to diet.
All right, let's figure this one out so that you can
continue.
So
I'm glad it wasn't the end of the world because I was started the diet for nothing.
let's put to the test that
spent
you actually
spent all my money on glow sticks again. Every time.
Continue your healthful diet because in what should come as a surprise to no one, the world did not end yesterday as previously predicted by Christian numerologist and author and Pinewood Derby expert David Mead. In additional non-surprising news, Mead himself has revised his original doomsday prediction, stating that he did not mean that the world would literally end on September 23rd, but that the world as we know it is ending.
So NASA's covering up a metaphorical planet on the other side of the sun?
I think so. His new claim is that there will be a series of events that will change a major part of the world as we know it by early October. In what may or may not be a coincidence, some television stations in California broadcast an emergency alert Thursday, warning that the end of the world, warning of the end of the world and extremely violent times to come. Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
This really happened?
Yeah, I'm
I didn't
sorry.
Read this brief before it. What? What?
Yeah.
Who hacked the emergency? This is like the...
They don't know if somebody hacked it. They really can't figure out what's going on. And that's what's really funny about this one.
So the broadcast appears to have been an error, and authorities are investigating where the ominous audio came from. This is a
sign of the apocalypse. Somebody hacked in an apocalypse warning.
This is like the Max Headroom.
It sounded like what happened was they were trying to test the emergency alert signal, and there should be two tones: a beginning tone and an ending tone. The ending tone never picked up or never cut off the broadcast, so the television stations were receiving audio feed from a radio station somewhere that then got broadcasted on the television, but they don't know where the audio came from.
It sounds like a man in the middle.
You know what? I kind of love this.
But it was really freaky. Their violent times are coming, and people were reporting that it sounded like it was like Hitler delivering a propaganda speech on their televisions, and the volume got really loud.
Okay, emergency alert systems do not actually say violent times are coming.
No.
That's not emergency alert. There's a tornado warning or something like that.
If this were an actual emergency, we would advise you to burn down your house and eat your children. That's not how it works.
It's a little unsettling either way. Like, the timing is just a little creepy on this.
So I was gonna say, before I heard that it was warning that extremely violent times were coming, so like there were a lot of deadlines for low power community radio stations to be up and running last week. We may or may not have been involved in some of them as well. Sam's actually been involved in a lot of like testing of EIS systems for community radio stations over the last week. Newsflash, his vacation's not actually been a vacation.
Work.
Although he might object to that soundtrack.
Sorry.
But my first thought might be like that maybe there was an error and there were some broadcasts from test broadcasts of testing emergency alert systems. But then what the emergency alert says that end times are coming or extremely violent things are happening.
Yeah.
This is like the Max Headroom, you know, hacking of public access.
PBS.
Yeah. From what is it, the late 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Sam would be able to fill us in a little bit better on that. Well, the apocalypse hasn't happened, so one charlatan down, 18 million more to go, right?
Yep.
Did the metaphorical apocalypse happen?
Well, I don't know, because it has to happen by early October that a particular region of the world will be greatly changed.
I like how hazy things start getting, like when 2012 was coming up and everyone's predictions went from the world's going to end on December 20th, 2012 or whatever, to the world will never be the same after 2012. Yeah, that's how time works.
Time goes, what, linearly? Mm-hmm. At least
and
in our reality.
Change in an irrevocable fashion. Yeah, that's exactly how time works.
So I said one charlatan down, 18 billion more to go, including none other than our friend and esteemed actress, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, yay. What'd she do this time?
Master purveyor of all things woo, Gwyneth Paltrow has opened her first brick and mortar location selling products featured on her popular lifestyle website, Goop. While the Goop Lab. Sorry, I gotta just keep repeating this. Goop. Mm-hmm. I can't even get through the brief without laughing at Goop. Why would you name it Goop?
Is it like for Gwyneth Paltrow? Do they sell a product that makes you better at basic marketing? Because that's a horrible name for anything.
Okay, so I'm not sure. Well, let's see. The Goop Lab is located in Los Angeles, California. It may sell some innocuous items like clothing and kitchen gadgets, albeit at ridiculously high prices. Thank you for your editorializing, Meredith.
It's so expensive.
They specialize in promoting scientifically unproven and new age inspired wellness products. Their apothecary section of the store carries such items as healing stones, sex dust, and a range of liquids made with sonically tuned gem elixirs with names like Psychic Vampire Repellent Protection Mist. We just lost Jeremy.
Repels psychic vampires or gives you the psychic ability to repel vampires?
I don't know. It's one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater?
I wish it was the last part, but it's definitely the first part.
Man, okay. Well,
repels psychic vampires?
No, repels people that psychically drain your energy.
Oh,
repels psychic vampires.
Yeah, so they psychically drain all your energy. So I'm like a really terrible person and I'm very negative and I pull all of your good energy out because I'm so mean. It would repel
me. The people who buy this product are probably those people.
They're probably buying the Bigfoot spray too.
Most of the emotional vampires I know have a lot of healing rocks.
Oh dear.
I know it's a stereotype, but I'm saying it.
But Jeremy, do they have chill child kid calming mist? Because that's also apparently sold here.
Chill child?
Robitussin?
Yeah, a Dimetapp. That's what I was thinking. Is it aerosolized Dimetapp?
A little bit of whiskey in your baby bottle and go back to sleep?
Whiskey on the gums.
I don't know. During Friday night Shabbos, when we would always have sanctification of the wine in my family when we were little, like we would get, you know, full cup of grape juice and it was a special treat because we got to have the kosher wine. And it was like, wait, until I was like 16, I was like, my parents weren't just sanctifying the Sabbath. They were putting us all to sleep so they'd finally have a Friday night to themselves. So I don't know what chill child kid calming mist is. Aerosolized knockout, baby knockout spray or something like that.
It's cyanide.
So, let's go back to the sex dust for a minute, because what the heck is sex dust? I mean, that's something you generally don't want, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a little too
sex
out there.
Sex dust? Is that when you're very old and
maybe you're a daughter?
Product
for surfboards, maybe?
That's sex wax.
Mm.
There's that thing, too? Man, I gotta look it up. So this is...
It's some sort of powder that is supposed to give you a sexy energy. You eat it,
or maybe you put it in your applesauce.
A lusty edible formula alchemized to ignite and excite energy in and out of the bedroom.
Alchemy. There is no such thing as alchemy. That's what happened before we understood elements and chemistry. Like, what? She's actually alchemized.
Of course, Gwyneth Paltrow believes in alchemy.
Does she really?
She also believes that you should steam your lady nether regions and put jade eggs in there for, like, I don't know.
Are they laid by jade chickens? Are they laid by psychic vampire chickens?
No, just rocks.
So for the
psychic
record.
Psychic vampire chickens.
Jade, that's what most of the, like, kitschy oriental tourist trap dragons are made out of.
Yeah, the sort of green.
She's onto something
stone.
Here. Convincing white people to buy things they think are from Asia is very lucrative.
I would actually, that probably, she's got the sage thing too. So
yeah,
not just
she's
not
got
just
like a
Asian.
Smudging,
so convincing white people that non-white
people are all magic.
Right. So you have the,
like in The Shining.
Yeah, it's a clean slate, smoke-free smudge mist. So instead of, I guess, a popular practice to rid an area of bad energy would be to get a bundle of sage and you set it on fire and use the smoke to smudge your house and bless your house. But,
not advised
you know,
for hoarders.
Oh, dear.
But I guess this is a smokeless version of that with gem, mineral, apothecary, alchemy,
the
magic.
Vaping version?
Yeah, this is like, yeah,
you put
vape
it in your vape?
Don't vape it.
I hate when my warding off evil spirits is just too much work. There has to be a better way. Oh, now you got a misting bottle. I don't even have to light anything on fire.
So, Jeremy, you've actually encountered people that do this like sage stick smudging and stuff like that. What's their is it warding off evil spirits? Is that really what it is? Are they warding off psychic vampires? What are they doing?
I think it's your mileage may vary situation. They might just be, you know, kind of hippy dippy, or it might be I got to get the evil spirits out. It's obviously not warding off psychic vampires. That's a whole other product line, Becky. There's no crossover here at Goop.
I gotta have a $30 bottle of mist for everything.
I don't know what to make of Gwyneth Paltrow. And it just, is it Goop because of the GP for Gwyneth Paltrow? And
I don't believe it when they tell me a celebrity has invented headphones or made a perfume. How does she have the authority to ward off psychic vampires?
I have no idea. I think that we'll just have to, I don't know. See, if anyone buys a product or comes into contact with a product from Goop, we'd love to add it to the Ask an Atheist collection. I think that would be...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, psychic vampire spray or...
Sex dust.
No, I'm going to stay away from that. I don't know if it's edible.
I'm going to combine those products. I'm psychic vampire sex dust.
I think psychic vampire sex dust might be the best thing to
And then
ever
I'm
going to
put it in the kid
from...
pacifier bottle.
Well, this is Ask an Atheist. Child. If you have any products that might warrant psychic dusting or misting, please send them to Ask an Atheist. But in the meantime, give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC or tweet us at Ask an Atheist WA. We'll be back after the break.
You are listening to KTAH LP 101.9 FM, Radio Tacoma, operating under a construction permit. If you'd like to help us out or learn more, go to radiotacoma.org. Specifically, if you're hearing this, we'd love to hear where you are and how you found this. Now, back to the testing.
Okay, can you say Radio Tacoma?
Radio Tacoma.
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 KTAHLP 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. I got Meredith and Jeremy with me in the studio, and I want to congratulate a member of the Ask an Atheist family. The Ask an Atheist family has just gotten a little bit bigger this morning. We give all of our congrats and best wishes to Tyson on the birth of his first child.
Yay! Congratulations, beautiful baby.
Well done on making a human, I suppose. So, a little bit more business. We're down a little bit in contributions that help cover the hosting costs and equipment upgrades and things like that. So, won't you please go to askanatheist.tv and click the yellow button, throw in some change, you know, it goes right to our PayPal. I promise you, it doesn't go to our beer fund or anything like that. It, like, literally goes to cover all the studio stuff. And separately, Sam has a Patreon. It's at patreon.com/SamMulvey. It's been helping with some Ask an Atheist adjacent activities with some really neat things on the horizon. So you can become Sam's patron. And thanks to Justin, Megan, and Jesse for becoming Sam's newest patrons this quarter.
Hey, thanks.
We definitely do thank you. So, Tyson, just please don't spray the goopy kid calming smudge stick psychic vampire spray.
I think his kid wouldn't be affected because I have a theory. What's in the kid calming spray?
Oh, what's that?
Any disease that we wiped out with vaccination. But since most of the people who go to this store and have children don't believe in vaccination, they just put a little smallpox in that bottle and it pacifies the child. So I think Tyson's kid is safe.
Dark. That is the most evil conspiracy theory, way, way worse than the North Korean...
Jeremy, I think you're reaching.
North Korean graffiti.
Nobody has said that it's not smallpox. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to go back to whiskey on the gums after that.
I'm going to need whiskey in my belly after this.
Well...
I'm drunk.
No, you're not.
We've actually got some neat news coming out of the religious community.
Do we have happy news now?
Yeah. Well, it's happy news. It's good news following some not so good occurrences. And
something tells me we're grading on a curve here.
We are grading on a curve. And this is that rabbis from the Chabad Lubavitch sect of Orthodox Judaism in Australia, Argentina, and the U.S. have issued a proclamation that calls for immediately reporting instances of abuse to secular authorities. Signatories acknowledge that their communities could have responded in more responsible and sensitive ways to help victims and to hold perpetrators accountable. The document calls for all Lubavitch schools and synagogues to enact training and policies that protect vulnerable individuals, such as children, the elderly, the disabled, and domestic abuse victims. And schools must also teach about body safety to students. So, you know, we've over the years covered the Catholic Church a lot with, you know, oh, we won't report, you know, abusers to authorities. We'll just, you know, keep it in house. And since the Vatican, you know, child sex abuse scandal really emerged in the early 2000s and really gained the attention and, you know, the horrified attention of the world, you see these in lots of religious communities that you have a tendency to protect a member of your tribe, so to speak, so as not to denigrate the impression, right, of outsiders about
the
your
integrity
community.
of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So we have you know, one religious sect. This is not all ultra-Orthodox Jews, for sure. We have at least one that is saying we need to take a stand and we need to protect people. I think this is what we've been looking for from, you know, something like the Vatican, something like Archbishop saying under no uncertain terms, you know, should all instances of abuse or suspected abuse be reported to secular authorities.
Yeah, to take it outside of the church. I think more churches and more religious communities should begin doing this, and it's a good step in the right direction.
It should be a crime to not do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2017. Are we really not going to report crimes to the police?
It's actually a crime in a lot of states to not report abuse of vulnerable individuals. So in some states, it's any adult of any adult of capacity. In other states, you become what's called a mandatory reporter if you are someone in charge of vulnerable populations. So I'm a teacher. Right.
Teacher.
Teachers yeah. are mandatory reporters.
Right. So I am criminally liable if I find out that someone may be being abused or a child's in danger and I fail to report that. I'm criminally liable. I'm also civilly liable if someone wants to, you know, sue the hell out of me after that. It's varying laws in, you know, in different states. Most states have things where teachers are mandatory reporters. But a lot of times clergy are included under that. Sometimes it's any adult. And those are sort of the strictest laws where it's incumbent upon any adult who, you know, witnesses or hears about possible abuse to report that for investigation. So I can see, yeah, it is 2017, Meredith. Are we going to not report things to the police? Well, yeah. I mean, we just got done, you know, half an hour ago talking about why people might not, you know, want to report certain things to the police, right? So, you know, but at the same time, having secular authorities basically investigating issues of abuse to prevent this insular protection of one's own and protection of your, you know, of your minority group name over the, you know, prioritizing that over the safety and health of children or of abuse victims. I think that that's really important. And I think that probably many religious people and atheists would love to see more religious communities doing this.
Yeah.
One of the things that particularly in the Orthodox community is this represents a change is so Lubavitch Hasidim is sort of one sect of ultra-Orthodox Judaism. They enforce gender segregation, modesty issues. Many times when you're raising a family, your children's first language might be Yiddish, and they might be English language learners, you know, that are not super proficient at English. And when you are, I think what it represents is this you know, impulse to protect the community and say, well, don't report because then they're going to think that all of us are, you know, abusers or all of us are criminals. I think what that represents is this fear of having lived as a minority population and having been viewed as the other. Now, for ultra-Orthodox Jews, yeah, you intentionally are separating yourself. You are intentionally viewing yourself as the other and separating yourself from that in accordance with your interpretation of what your God requires of you. But if people weren't so automatically fearful of the other and could understand that one person committing a crime doesn't represent an entirety of a community, you know, then I think that we wouldn't have that impulse.
Yeah, but I don't think people are ever going to realize that because that's like the crux of the majority of the problems we have in America is not realizing that other people are just people.
Or tribalism. I don't know that it's just America.
Well,
in that
case.
Yeah.
As a species in general.
And I think the inclusion of Australia in this is really key since there were many Orthodox rabbis in Australia that had previously been on record as saying like, oh, it's such a shame, like doing a lot of victim blaming and saying, you don't want to bring that up. If that happened to you as a boy, that sullies your, you know, your ability to find a good wife and be married off. Don't just hush.
Yeah,
it's in the past. It's shameful. Mm. And you don't need to bring it up now because
that's
that brings
awful.
Shame upon the community and shame upon yourself. And so I think that it's remarkable that the signatories, two of the signatories have come from Australia because, you know, it's in contrast to saying, you know, hush, hush, you know, I'm sorry that happened to you when you were little, but, you know, you don't want to bring up that nastiness. You don't want to have your potential wife find out about that, you know, something that happened to you as a boy. And I think that's really important Unfortunately, a lot of the places that have been documented in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish communities for protecting abusers don't come from Chabad Lubavitch sect, but the Haredi sect, which is like the ultra-Orthodox of Satmar Hasidim. And all these different names come from just whoever their originators followed, right?
Okay.
So in Lubov or in Satmar, you know, it's like whoever was your Rebbe, whoever was your leader.
So the first group, the group that the story is about, is ultra-Orthodox?
Yes, they're all...
And the other one you referred to as ultra-Orthodox? Is that an actual term?
How
many ultras are there?
I don't know how many ultra
level one, ultra level two.
I mean, Haredi is...
No, it's a serious question. I mean, is there ultra... There's Orthodox, there's ultra-Orthodox. Is there ultra-Orthodox, or is it something you said?
That might be just something I had said.
Yeah. Honestly asking. I'm not making a joke.
I think Lubavitch Hasidim are seen as more integrated with modern life than the Satmars, because just in my personal experience as a not observant Jewish person, even when I was observant in like the Reform movement, I wasn't observant in their favorite best way, right?
Right.
So, unorthodoxed.
Right. Right. Exactly. I was very unorthodox. The Satmar, you know, have very insular qualities that don't want to even welcome in less affiliated Jews or less observant Jews, because it would sully their particular insular community, right? It would sort of downgrade their level of observance. The Chabad Lubavitchers, on the other hand, they're like the proselytizers.
Oh, is yeah, they enjoy proselytizing to themselves, kind of, right?
To people
practicing Jews,
exactly, to people that they consider to be Jews, but they have to bring them in line, bring them into the fold, right? So
I'm envisioning a situation where someone shows up, good news, you're Jewish, come on.
You can envision it, it's happened.
Oh yeah,
congratulations, you're mm-hmm. Jewish,
like a lot of
I'd be like, all right, where's the bar mitzvah money, come on.
that's wouldn't be a completely bad response to to that, but yeah, they also, you know, I would say they prey upon young people at college. There's a lot of Lubavitch houses and Chabad houses that are adjacent to college campuses. These are young people away for the first time, mm-hmm. trying to find a different community.
Now, religion always preys on the people at their weakest points.
Yeah.
The homeless, the people at the bus stop, and the poor people and children.
So
Mercer Island does not have a lot of bicycles rolling around that are, you know, kids in black suits knocking on doors for the Mormon church. They're in the hood. They come to my house all the time.
I never get door knockers. I mean,
you're rich.
Well, I'm not rich. I live in a...
You're a renter in a nice area.
I'm a renter in a nice area. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a sign now that says no knockers of any... no knockers of any kind. But even when we didn't have a sign up...
That's because you
never,
don't have enough sex
we never
dust,
get
Meredith.
Religious folk in the North End.
Yeah. Well, there's at least one sect of one sect of one religion that is trying to not prey upon the most vulnerable in one particular way. And to that, I would applaud that effort, and I would say I wish more religions would come out with statements like that. So we've got some happy news, some really nice news. I just thought, you know, I gotta look at some nice things. I don't want to talk about, you know, war with Korea. I don't want to talk about, with North Korea, excuse me. I don't want to talk about, you know, I don't want to dwell upon, you know, more black and brown bodies being bashed on, you know, for entertainment or for, you know, ostensible public safety. I want to talk about something awesome and neat and science-y. So this is really cool. NASA has named a computational research facility in Virginia after Katherine G. Johnson, the pioneering mathematician who featured as the protagonist of the book and film Hidden Figures. The center will support data analysis, computer modeling, research and development for NASA missions, and the facility's namesake has been referred to as a human computer. Ms. Johnson famously calculated trajectories for American space flights, having worked at Langley Air Force Base from 1953 to 1986.
That is awesome. It makes me smile.
It is really cool. And I think it's a really key time to be bringing some of this stuff to light. You know, it's awesome to see NASA basically in the process of revamping a lot of their different research facilities. They can do a lot of different computer modeling with high power data analysis that they used to have to do in, you know, big facilities like wind tunnels and things like
yeah.
that. And then to have you know, the honor of naming the facility after a black woman, right? An African American woman, saying, yeah, we should get back to that time when women were mathematicians, because we've seen in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s a huge, you know, downward trend of women being coders and mathematicians and analysts.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny to say that in a time of segregation, we actually had, you know, more women doing mathematics work than mm-hmm. we do now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous when people say things along the lines of women aren't good in tech, and like the whole idea of a programming language a human could understand was invented by a woman.
Yep. So, well done to Terry McAuliffe for Virginia governor for welcoming and officiating that particular ribbon cutting. Well done to Katherine Johnson. She's 99 years old. She's 99 years old. That's amazing.
It's so amazing. I think it's great for... Not only is it a woman, it's a woman of color that's being honored in a STEM field. And as somebody that works in tech, I work for a web development company. I'm not necessarily a coder. But
you work with numbers?
I'm in the industry, and I know how women are treated in tech fields, and it's not super fun. But the representation it's important. It matters to young girls. It will get them interested in going into these fields, seeing other women and women of color be highlighted. I think it's great.
So we as atheists, we like social justice. We like science. We like religions that step up to the plate and, you know, behave better. We like learning new vocabulary words. We don't like dotards. And...
We would like Colin Kaepernick to be, you know, employed by the NFL. That is one thing that I forgot to mention earlier.
Tell us more about that. Because is it a matter of his, like, playing abilities? Or do you think that this is really, you know, he took the brunt of...
He took the brunt of take a knee. I think it's ridiculous that...
He was the original.
He was the original, and no team...
First person in human history, that's not true.
Yes, but. The first person ever in the history of the world. No,
First NFL player to really
get this movement going, and he hasn't been drafted by any teams. I think it's a little duplicitous for the owners and the coaches of the teams to be making all these statements in support of the players when Kaepernick's still not employed.
And when so you think that really his failure to be drafted was a proxy for we don't want this troublemaker on our team?
Yeah. His skill isn't as good as it has been in the past, but he is still a draftable quarterback, and there's no reason why he shouldn't have been drafted by someone this year.
The NFL doesn't like these kind of wild card situations. The guy a year or two ago who's going to be the first openly gay player also kind of blackballed out of the
shoot, who's my favorite NFL player that no longer plays NFL?
Arian Foster has quit. He's retired.
Yeah.
And his was on pushback because of he elected to stop, right?
Retired. Yeah, he was like one of the first, if not the first, open atheist.
Mm-hmm. And God retired. Doesn't really matter, and this is how I'm going to teach my kid.
Yep.
So,
and speaking of atheist football players, there's also Pat Tillman, who left the NFL to join the military and then died.
Right, and
was an open atheist.
I think maybe perhaps that you know, we might have some different kind of treatment of all of these trailblazing individuals, you know, later on, you know, if they had come at a different time, if they had come at a different moment, and
if they come after the trail they are blazing.
Okay. Fair point. I guess that's me giving my thanks to the trailblazers, those who are, you know, brave in stepping up and going forward. And those who also then support the trailblazers, be it in statements, be it in actions, be it in linked arms. Thank you, Jeremy and Meredith, for joining me today on Ask an Atheist. I'm your producer, Becky Friedman. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. You can tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA, email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, find us on Facebook, and support Sam on Patreon. Give us some feedback about what we got wrong, where we should be going. If you have purchased anything from Goop.
Well, first off, Jesus is real. That's where you're going wrong.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.